Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this week's photo show. As you can see, we've got a slight change in the lineup tonight. Unfortunately, Ian couldn't join us, but we've got an amazing stand-in for him tonight with Marty. Marty Welter is going to join us tonight. Marty is based in Junction City in Wisconsin, in America. So he's going to join us to talk about his photography. He's a semi-professional photographer there in Junction City. And he specializes, and we've been looking at some of his work, in rodeo photography. Now, I know here in the UK, people will say there's not many rodeos for us to go and photograph, but I think some of it will lead into other types of sports action photography you take involving animals and other situations. Also joining us is Damien. Let me just bring us all up so you can everyone can see each other. Good evening, Damien. Good evening, Walt Marty.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, it's what, mid-afternoon for you at the moment, isn't it, where you are, Marty?
It is. Beautiful, sunshiny day, warm and humid.
Lovely. And we're looking at some spectacular sunsets, aren't we, Damien?
Yes.
It's lovely out there.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So, Marty's going to, in the second half of the show, we're going to go into more detail about what Marty does and the photographs and how they're taken and the tricks and that he uses to get these spectacular images. But we're going to start off with a little bit of news that we spotted this week and a few bits of kit. So news items this week we've seen, the big one that we saw earlier on was Canon. Canon have been attacked with a ransom attack. American sites have been badly affected and have been taken down, including the main site for Canon USA and also their Canon image. And apparently they have lost 10 terabytes of data. Now the situation is, I think they've gone very quiet about whether they're actually going to pay the ransom demand. I know a lot of companies have been affected by this. And it tees in with what we were discussing last week. Remember, Damien, about backup and storage. It highlights the fact that you can't have enough backups and you can't have enough places to store them in. So make sure that you're covered, because you have to assume someone as large as Canon, if they're getting caught out, then all the places where we store, you know, iCloud, Alphabet, Google, all them sort of places, there must be some vulnerability that they could be affected. So you don't store anything with Canon, do you, Damien?
No, I tend to do a lot of hard disk. I hold a lot on hard disks, and then that's the other part, that whether your house catches on fire, where you store it and whatever. So, but I'm also quite ruthless in that I keep a lot of, I hone down my pictures to what I, and they tend to be, yes, I don't tend to have them keep and hoard too many pictures. As I talked about last time, I was once told off for hoarding too much of my work at work by the IT guys. So I've learned to be a little bit more good housekeeping with my IT. But I have been hacked twice in my career and lost all my material, so I know what it's like. So you've always got to be ready for, one was by a virus and one was by just human error by the IT guys. So you just got to be ready and, as you say, have it all backed up.
What's
Marty,
your
what you do about your backup?
Yeah, what's your process, Marty?
So I'm still kind of somewhat old school on some of these things. So I actually still burn everything to CDs or DVDs, I guess, because it holds more, you know, for more storage. But I also back up to hard disks. I haven't really gone to the cloud a whole lot to do most of my storage just yet. Part of it is just the fact that I've done it this way for so long.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
So it changes your whole process when you start using another source. So I'm kind of old school and doing the old DVDs and just regular hard drive backups.
Yeah. My only concern about that kind of stuff is not so much the medium, it's the medium player. You know, with everyone ditching CD drives and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we used to use mini disc, we've had jazz drive, you name it, there's been different types. So it's whether or not you can still access it sometime in the future. So,
Right. Well, I've been keeping that in mind going down the road, but that's a very, very good point. So I got to start stocking up on Apple's little disc drives.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's a case of you can plot out where you get very nervous in recent times. So in the last 5 years, you're very keen to keep all the material. And then as it gets older, the material tend to forget about it and you don't worry about it. And then there's suddenly a nostalgia kick where you then go back into all that material and start looking at it, because it then becomes quite a memorable thing to look at. So what that material looks like, well, certainly from my parents' stuff, it's all in photo albums and stored away. What it would be like for our generation looking back, and what hard disks, will those CDs be able to be used? Laser discs, there was a lot of people putting material on laser discs, and now reading laser discs is very difficult. So will the DVD player still be around to read, etc.?
Yeah, you know, so it's interesting you bring up the nostalgia part, though, Damien, is so when I started doing these rodeos back in 92, of course, that was on film. And I consistently get some of my past clients coming back and looking for pictures from years gone by. So I have a great cataloging system, and I still have all my negatives from all those rodeos. So I'm going through and having to scan those. But even finding a good quality film scanner is getting tougher and tougher.
Yeah, that's true. That's very difficult.
So I think, the important thing out of that is, if whatever format you're using, you need to make sure you've got some format reader that either keep it as a spare. So I can't believe the number of CD drives and players we've thrown out. And jazz, as I said, I've got a load of backup jazz files because no jazz drive to read them on. They're now stuck. So I was just reading here on the page. Canon has said, the spokesman says, the company is currently investigating the situation. Otherwise, they're working out how much money they're going to have to pay. Okay, let's move on to the only other thing we were talking about. Ewan Rankin is our guy here on BTN. But you came across another Rankin today, Damien, didn't you?
Well, he's a well-known photographer called Rankin. And Rankin is on a search for the best photographer, he says, in the world, amateur or professional. And he's looking at finding pictures from people, and he's got six categories, and he wants to do them over the lockdown period. You can send them into his user hashtag 2020 Rankin, and he's looking for, as he says on his site, he's looking to submit or something from the back catalog that represents the year 2020, something that represents the year 2020. And you've got to the 15th of August to submit it. And interestingly, one of our local photographers had some very witty billboard with a person with a face mask underneath. And he's already picked up on that one. So if you want to get your name in lights and be famous, and it's all going to be televised on the Sky Arts TV channel, you put your hashtag on your Instagram, Rankin 2020. I'm not sure what my best picture 2020 would be. I think it's a teddy bear looking out of a window taken during one of the lockdowns, and it's raining, and there's a sign next to it saying relax.
All right, we'll have to look at that. I just typed in quickly, very quick, typed in Rankin into the search engine to see it. And whose site came up? Only Ewan's. So Ewan, you made sure your site is in the best condition. You're going to get a lot of inadvertent click-throughs. Right, so
Marty,
okay.
What would be your best picture 2020 then?
Let's see if I have this in my little virtual backgrounds here. I don't. So earlier this, right after all this started, I was out on a hike with a friend of mine from my camera club, and came across, it was a nice blue sunny sky day. We came across two mourning doves sitting up on a power line, but they were well apart, and it looked like they were practicing social distancing. So I cropped it to a nice, like a 21:9 format, and dropped some text in between them, and I think that was my favorite one.
That's a good one.
Well, it just so happened, guys, I've got those photographs, and I'm going to show them up here now, so people can see this is the best of 2020 so far. Now, I'll put one in if I can find one. I haven't taken a photograph this year that's even marginally as good as your two. So Let's see how that works. Okay, so this week's kit that we've got. Now, Ian sent us in some details of a new Sigma lens, which looks really interesting, an 85mm f1.6 lens. But unfortunately, Ian's not here, so I don't really want to go down that road without his expertise. So we'll hold that bit over for next week, and we'll discuss that lens in next week's show. And the other bit of news that we saw was that Canon have announced there's going to be two more R-bodies released next year. Details are very sketchy at the moment, but it looks like they're hitting the new R series extremely hard. We've been discussing this, Marty, over the last few weeks about the way a lot of the manufacturers seem to be pulling out of cameras, and Canon seem to be going wholeheartedly now into the R series and R mount to the detriment of the old DSLR. So we're keeping tracks on that. But you pointed out, you said earlier to me about Canons, you'll be able to cook your egg and bacon sandwich on top of the Canon after you've done some video. They're still having, this is a real disaster for them about this overheating problem. But strangely, and I'm just going to call this site up, this young man has found a way around the problem. Apparently, you just remove the compact cards from the camera and record to an external source, and lo and behold, the overheating problem seems to go away. So again, this website here, you can see he's done a couple of videos showing how it actually works, and it does. So if you want to follow up on that, have a look at that. But I think this overheating Canon is going to be running and running and running for the next few weeks. Okay, so that's the news and kit for this week. What we really want to do is get into the exciting bit of the show, which is Marty has joined us tonight looking at his Rodeo photographs. He's very kindly sent us a PowerPoint with a lot of images, and we're going to get him to talk that through. So, Marty, would you like to tell the viewers a little bit about yourself, how you got into this, and where you are?
Sure. So, I, as you mentioned earlier on in the show, I'm in central Wisconsin, USA, right smack dab in the middle of the state. I've been photographing rodeos since 1992, and I travel about 9 states. Area here in the Midwest to do that. So it's been a very fun, rewarding little extra career on top of my real job.
Okay, great. And we were saying earlier on, your first camera, you want to tell me about that you mentioned to us?
Sure. So back when I started at the ripe old age of 12 years old, I started doing photography. So I've been playing this game for 45 years now, professionally, although again, not quite as long, but my first camera was actually a Petrie rangefinder. It was a Korean War vintage camera. It was all mechanical. And when it broke, I learned how to take it apart, fix it, and keep me going for a couple of years until I graduated to a Minolta SR7D or SLR three lenses, all screw mount lenses. So changing a lens was a lot of work. So, and then just continued on after that, building and improving upon my equipment. I'm a Canon shooter now, and have been for many years.
Okay, what have you got now? What's your favorite piece of kit?
So, well, I own 5 bodies, and I don't know how many lenses, but the 2 bodies that I use most are either a Canon 7D Mark II. Or a 5D Mark III, and I kind of mix and match camera bodies and lenses to my work environment. So depending on which rodeo arena I'm working in, some are bigger, some are smaller, and I have to kind of figure out what's the best combination for that particular arena.
Great. Do you shoot video at all, or is it nearly all stills?
All stills. The closest I've come to video, last year I kind of got into drone stuff a little bit, so I've been dabbling in video with that a little bit, but I'm a still photographer. I always have been.
Okay, right. Let me bring up this series of photographs you sent us. So let me just get that into.
It's nice to hear you're a Canon user. So was that just by mistake or by choice?
That's an interesting way to put that. It was, you know, friends won't let friends shoot Nikon, you know. So
I'm a Canon user, and it happened because my wife bought me a 500D, and I ended up staying with Canon, and I quite like Canon. And then I got into and then I suddenly realized, well, I'd used a Nikon compacts before, and I had an old Yashica film camera.
That goes back
as well, but it's you just get used to it, and I lust after the Fuji now.
Oh, right, okay, I've got it teed up now, so let's have a look at this for you. Okay.
A quick look. So you just need to scroll up there, Martin, with the PDF. There you are.
This is the equipment you're using, you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and you know, one of the advantages of that 7D Mark II is it's incredible for low light, and the rodeo conditions typically for this part of the world anyway end up being a lot of evening and nighttime rodeos. So it's always really challenging lighting to work in. And so the transition from film to digital and all that, you know, you learn how to push films to get them up to speeds, and certainly with today's modern cameras, you can really go places with the ISOs.
And I assume there must be a lot of dust there as well, so that must be an enemy of yours as well.
Yeah. You don't change lenses out in the arena.
No, awesome.
I think as we'll see as well, I think the mud has something to do with it as well. Right. Yep. Okay. So
this picture here, it's always been one of my favorites, and this was actually photographed early on in my rodeo career. 95 is when I took this at a rodeo, and it was still on a film camera, an old Olympus OM-1 is what I took it with. So, you know, it was when you shot film, you didn't motor drive very much. In fact, I still shoot that way with the rodeo. I still shoot much like I'm shooting film. And you never knew until you got your film back, of course, did I get the picture?
Yeah.
And I guess I got the picture, because it just doesn't, I've never been able to duplicate that in all the years since then.
This would go just for me to show that you have to understand and know the sport as well, because that gives absolutely. You an indication. Have you ever actually been a rodeo rider yourself, Marty?
Never competed. I can ride horses. I've been fortunate enough never to be bucked off of one, but rodeo is kind of a fun sport. It's a family sport, and the rodeo community itself is kind of a family in and of itself. So I've participated in the openings of rodeos, riding horses. One time I was part of a stagecoach act where I was on the back of the stagecoach and got shut off, and I had to fall and hang by my ankle. And so even as a photographer, you kind of get involved. You know, it's a sport, but it's also an entertainment medium. So
when you're taking a picture here, like with film here, you didn't have the ISO at the time. So how did you get your, I mean, now you have the ISO, can you pump it up, as you say, to 8,000? That must be a luxury to you. But in those days, it wasn't, was it?
Boy, that's a great point, Damien. And so, you know, I if I went back to look at this film, I'm going to guess that it was ASA. Remember ASA? 400 film. And, you know, it was early enough in the evening and in the month of July here. So we had decent lighting even into the early evening. But if I had to guess at my exposure on it, you know, I'm probably not much more than 500th of a second, and probably, you know, at a four or five aperture. To your point, Martin, though, knowing the subjects and understanding the mannerisms of what animals do, you can almost see this happening before it actually happened. You know, it's the right place, right time kind of thing.
It comes back. Timing is everything, isn't it? It's all too easy with 20 frames a second cameras that you think you can catch it. But even when you do that, you find the actual shot you want was the one in between the 20th of a second. So, no, that's a classic.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because when people ask me about motor driving, and again, as I mentioned, I still shoot like I'm shooting a film. It's all anticipation and click. And I've seen that firsthand, where you try to motor drive, but you still don't always actually catch that rare moment. And this is another great example of that. You know, you've got both the bull's face and the cowboy's face planted in the mud.
Yeah.
And so when I was shooting this one, I was more times than not, when I'm photographing rodeos, I'm actually in the arena shooting it. Some of the arenas though really aren't set up that's possible. So I was just outside the fence in an area where I got the shot, and I knew I had the shot because of course it's digital now and you can look right away. And I'm looking around and I got nobody to share it with. And I'm like, oh man. So, but I was really excited. So my work process is, when the rodeo is finished, I go back to my camper, I download the pictures, I get them on my iPad, and I head up to the rodeo dance and I start finding the cowboys to show them pictures. Well, the first guy I ran into for this one was actually the rodeo announcer, and I showed it to him, and he's like, wow, that's a really cool picture, and we're looking around and there's nobody else to share it with.
Well, I'm glad we're able to share it with us today. That's just great. Yeah, a double face plant is quite impressive.
It's just a fun thing, yeah.
Can I ask a question? I mean, because many of our listeners will look at it. I mean, it is a safe sport. I mean, do people, I mean, the animals and the riders, it looks like it's pretty dramatic, but I assume it's got very high safety standards.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So I should go back and mention, I'm a member of the Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association as a photographer. The PRCA, as it's known as, is the largest sanctioning body for pro rodeo. And absolutely, we take safety of both our animals and our contestants on the forefront. So if you were to look at our rule book, probably a third of that rule book is all about animal safety. And statistically, with sanctioning right now somewhere in the area of 700 rodeos throughout the country, the statistic is 0.1% of the rodeo animals throughout the year may be injured or unfortunately worse, and it will happen. Mm-hmm. But it's, again, in the 27 years I've been doing this sport, it's so few times you actually see an animal really get hurt or maimed bad enough that you have to put them down. So it's a very, very safe sport in that respect, and we've done a lot of work to make it so.
Unfortunately, some of the riders don't come off as easy as well, though, do they?
the riders have a choice. The animals don't always have a choice. So, yeah, so the riders know what they're getting into, and, yeah.
It does look like a tough sport.
Getting back on the photography, Marty, I noticed on your second bullet point or your introduction, you said that, it's the ISO I'm coming back to, 8,000. Some people may not be comfortable, but it's the best you're going to get in this sort of conditions type of thing. So, but I immediately blew that picture up to have a little look at it. There's a little bit of blur, but not very much. It's still dramatic when you put it back into the normal focus. So it's interesting what your comments are, again, on the elaboration of the camera setting, because you've got a really high shutter speed, and you had a middle of the road with your aperture. So you interesting, talk us through what you keep standard and what you tend to play around with.
Sure. So I photograph an aperture priority, so because I again, shooting in low light situations, I want to try and draw as much light in as I can. So the picture you're seeing here, this is bareback riding, and Martin, I think I sent you another PDF that had a description of all the rodeo events.
Yeah.
So you can include that in your meeting notes when you get that out. But so bareback riding is basically what these guys are doing. They're holding on to what looks like a suitcase handle, and they're leaning way back, and it's a fast-paced thing. So I've got to be able to get my speeds up enough. Well, as the light keeps going down, of course, I want to draw in as much of that light as I can, trying to keep my maximum aperture. And this one, I use my 100 to 400, which has an aperture at 400 to 5.6. So, I'm adjusting ISOs to bring them up higher. As you can see, I adjust the EV value as well. And I've just found that if I'm about a third of a stop under fairly consistently, it really helps maintain a lot of the integrity in the image, especially at these high ISOs.
Yeah. Right.
Of course, it for something like that, you're going to be using good quality kit, good lenses and good cameras to be able to go up to them kind of ISO speeds. So that picture, does that then require a lot of work afterwards, and do you do much image work on it?
So if you go to the next image,
you just need to move the arrow, Martin, as well.
Yeah.
So I did do just some really basic editing. I use Luminar for the bulk of my image editing now. And Luminar is just filled with all kinds of great tools like the AI Enhanced and things like that. So I didn't have to do a lot. I bet you if I spent maybe, 2 minutes in post-processing on it just to bring it out, crop it, and get it going. So this would certainly, even at ISO 8000, would certainly go up to 11 by 14, if not larger, for my customers if they were ordering a large print of that.
Yeah.
And who are your customers, Marty? Who are they? Is it the Rodeo Association or the riders themselves?
Yeah, so the bulk of it is the riders themselves. Through the association, the PRCA, they do have a trade publication, which on occasion I'll have images run in there. The people who provide the stock for the rodeos, the stock contractors, will purchase pictures that showcase their animals really well. So that's the main clientele that I'm working with.
Okay.
I was going to say, because you're not so stuck in giving the clients what they want. This is exactly what they want. If you're doing a wedding or anything, they'll have certain preconceived ideas. Here, you must sit yourself. I mean, I think that's your best photograph. I like that one. This is my favorite one.
Yeah.
So steer wrestling. And so one of the ways that I learned how to photograph rodeos was by actually listening to the contestants and having them tell me, well, if you did this early on, if you did this, you did that, it would be a better picture. And so it just seemed like I, for whatever reason, I just kind of had a natural knack for it, for learning it. It didn't take me long to pick it up.
Yeah. Well,
steer wrestling, and as you it really is a steer wrestling picture, it's about a picture perfect example where the cowboy's foot is just coming out of the stirrup there, but he's already got a hold of that steer, and unfortunately I don't have the next shot, which would be the cowboy actually twisting that steer his head and pulling it down to the ground. And then what has to happen is the steer needs to go to the ground and all 4 feet need to be turning away from the cowboy. And then the judge drops his flag and that's the qualified time.
Okay. Do they still, I saw once where they wrap the four legs together. Is that still part of it or is that not done? Is that a different sport?
Not in pro rodeo. Actually, they in pro rodeo, would never wrap four legs. They'll wrap three and that'll be coming up here. I'll have an example of that.
Right. Okay.
So it's actually tie down roping is what that is.
Okay.
So
now
this
is you said that sometimes you're in the arena or outside. So in that example there, are you in or outside the arena when you're taking that one?
So I'm in for steer wrestling. And in fact, I always tell people that it's probably my most dangerous event while I'm in the arena shooting. And it's because of my placement where I have to be to get the correct angle and the correct picture. But those horses are trained to run at full hilt till they hit the other end of the arena where I'm standing. So I've had more close calls about getting run over by horses than I have anything during that event. It's not the bull riding that'll get you. For me, it's that steer wrestling.
Right. So,
this event, this is team roping, and this is the only event that there's actually two guys competing on the same animal at one time. So this is what's known as the header. So his job is to obviously catch the head of that steer. Dally's off on his saddle and pulls that steer around. You can notice on that steer that there's actually some wraps around the horns, and that's for the protection of the animal so they don't get rope burn up on the horns.
Right. And I think the next one is, that's the second part of it.
Correct. So that's the heeler, and where that rope is looped around, their job is to get hopefully both of those hind legs in a loop and pull taut. And the two riders have to actually face off to each other in a split second. So I'm just reading an article this morning, Rodeo out in Nebraska. There was an arena record set there at 3.8 seconds. So from the time they left that box in the background, roped that steer, and faced off, it took them 3.8 seconds. Most of us can't even think about tying our shoes in about, you know, 2 minutes, let alone.
I was going to say, the Formula One teams would be happy to get four tires on in that time. It was pretty good going.
Yeah, so it was pretty amazing.
So,
I know one of the cowboys that got that time, so there's a little bit better now that I did the editing, a little bit better shot of that loop that all he has to do is pull back. That big loop will then come up around those back hocks, and he'll have a perfect run there.
All right. And, of course, this all comes from reality in the older days. They actually had to do all this as part of their daily work, wasn't it? Am I right in that?
That is correct. So, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, out on the ranch, there was really no other way to doctor animals other than to catch them and, you know, whether they had to vaccinate them or brand them or whatever it was. The necessary work then turned into games and sportsmanship, where one cowboy said, well, I could do that better than you, and you know how that goes. So hence the sport of rodeo was born back in the late 1800s.
You have to forgive me, Marty. Most of my knowledge of this is based upon westerns I watched on the TV, so I'm sure it's the same as what your version view of what English royalty is like, based upon some of the stuff you might see in America. So, right.
I love the billboards as well for life out here.
Yeah. So the billboards, in fact, you can't really see it, but right above where it says Strum Foods is actually, I have a billboard there at that rodeo too for my photography business. So I'm a sponsor for that rodeo as well. So
right.
Well, I guess maybe where it does say Strum Foods, that's usually where I was. So that year I mustn't have had it there then. So right. Anyway, yeah.
So this again, this is bareback again, is it?
Nope, this is actually Saddlebrock now. So the difference is now you see that he's got a little rein that he's holding on to. And so to keep his balance, he's actually lifting on that rein. He's actually sitting in the saddle rather than bareback on the horse. And he's just got to keep himself pulled down into that saddle. And you notice his right arm out there, that's the free arm, and that cannot touch the animal at any time during the ride, or he gets disqualified.
Oh, gosh.
I'm looking at the photograph. This is quite, you know, this is quite clever, because you must be panning and tracking at the same time as trying to get the photograph. So to catch so much clearly in focus and, you know, being spot on, it's, very intuitive. I like that. And as I said, it's not just dust, is it? That looks like there's a bit of mud there.
Yeah, well, it's it's a bit of mud, all right. That arena is always a bit of mud. So, you know, with Canon's active tracking that they have built in, you know, if you get into all your deep settings, you know, using AI servo and all that, there's different ways you can set up tracking. And this is really set up for the erratic erratic behavior that rodeo offers. And so if you understand what I'm referring to there.
No, I know which the control panel now is. Yes, I never venture into those as an amateur very much, but I never seen a horse one, never seen one for rodeo, but I've seen one for all the other sports you can
right.
do.
I mean, it would work well for birds as well, because they're so unpredictable. But it's really part of what, to me, and again, because I'm not a Nikon shooter, it's what made the Canons very attractive to be able to have that type of feature.
And how many frames per second are you shooting?
I shoot like I shoot film, click. Click.
Just a click. That's very clever then. That's good.
So, and again, it's so I'm watching for things to happen here. So
this
is right where you want the picture, but what has to happen is I'm actually shooting out ahead of the action. So I'm watching that horse, and I can see by the mannerism of the horse and what he's doing, that next shot should be click right here. Another place I've put that into practice, we don't have to back up the pictures, Martin, but going back to that team roping, Yeah. I was shooting one rodeo in the pouring down rain, and I had a big blue plastic bag over my camera, and I really couldn't see through the viewfinder, but I knew when the cowboys left the gate, I knew about when they should be throwing their rope, and I'd go click, and same thing on the heels, and I go click, and it was pretty consistent. I was really amazed at myself when I went back and downloaded the pictures, how accurate I was just by that feel of timing, and that only comes from experience.
Yeah, I think as you say there, the fact that you see the loop is hardly moving down the rope at that point, and I should think that that snaps quite quickly onto the legs of the cow. So to catch it at that moment, that's experience and that's ability.
You can't teach somebody that. All you can just try to explain, this is when you do it, but it's just the innate sense of knowing, okay, here's where it should happen, go click.
Yeah. I can't tell you the number of photographs I've got of the back half of a Formula One car or the front half of a Formula One car speeding by. But get the Formula One car, yeah, I'm still working on. Okay, let's go to the other one we saw. Right, okay. Now, again, the timing here, I say, if you're not using
motor drive,
that's to do with knowing your subject. That's, to me, a classic case that you know almost what's coming before it actually happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you got to figure his head is probably about 12 feet, 13 feet in the air there. I don't know what that equates to meters. He's a ways up there. He's getting frequent flyer miles there.
Yes, 4 meters. Yep. It's a long way down from up there, isn't it?
Marty, have you ever thought about going even zooming in further, maybe getting, you're on a 400 meter lens, getting an 800 or anything like that, so you can get really into expression to the faces and that?
You know, that's more of an editorial thing that a lot of times when the newspapers are they're shooting the rodeos, that's kind of what they're doing. They're looking for that really, really tight shot. But, you know, in my mind, this is really telling the story of the picture. If I got right into his face, it's great for editorial, but it just doesn't lend itself to the aspect that I'm trying to portray. Yes.
Admittedly, on that one, Damon, the horse is definitely saying, there, gotcha.
I know, I see that. Buckaroo.
Get it off of my back.
All right, and again, a really fast ISO speed. So that. So what time of night was this? Well, you say it's getting dark. What time of day is this normally taking place at?
Well, if my metadata below there is correct, it's 8:38 in the evening, and it gets the dark about 9:15 there that time of year.
So this is twilight, dusk kind of time. It's not
correct.
Yeah, I saw the time. It's difficult to associate that. Is it, you know, like here in the summer, 8 o'clock can be sort of like almost daylight. So, okay.
Where the sun sets for this arena, it's already behind trees. So I've lost all my sun. Now it's just ambient light that I've got here.
And you say something, was that you, did you use a speed light on that? You say sometimes you use a speed light?
Yeah. No. So at this particular rodeo, I try to shoot up to this event without having to put a flash on. And then everything after this, I'd probably have a flash on. So at this point yet, no, I don't. And the one question I get a lot is, does that, when that flash goes off, does that affect the animals or the riders? Do they see it? And they really don't. I mean, everything is happening so fast. They're worried about their job. You know, all the crowd, the noise and everything else going on, that flash is no bearing at all on what happens.
Yeah, I don't see the horse suddenly stopping and giving you a dirty look for flashing at the same time, you know. So, right.
So, and actually, I probably should have had a flash on for this one, but I didn't. I can see that because I don't see it in the eyes, and I can see by my ISO only at 500. But I don't know why it came out as well as it did.
Yeah, it's good. So again, he's just caught him, just dismounting now to bring that must be a young cow, is it? Calf.
Yeah. So this is the calf roping. You asked earlier about tying all four legs. I actually tie three legs, and I wish I would have included an example of that. But what would happen next is, so the cowboy's got the calf caught. Now he's going to kind of slide down and hang on to that rope as he comes. He's going to do what's called flanking the calf. He's going to grab basically a chunk of hide and a couple of legs, throw them up, throw them back down on the ground. When he's got them on the ground, I don't know if you go to the next picture, if we can see it a little clearer. In his mouth, in the cowboy's mouth, he's actually got a rope that he's holding on to his teeth.
Yeah.
And so that's what's called a piggin string, and that's what he's going to use to tie that calf's feet up once he gets him on the ground. He's got to get three legs tied, throws his hands up, and the judge says, okay, there's your time.
I suppose with three legs tied up, the cow's not going anywhere. He's not going to be able to.
Not if the cowboy did his job and tied it correctly. Sometimes they know they're trying to beat the clock, so they'll be kind of either careless with their tie or mistie it or something like that, that the calf will get up. If the calf gets up before a 6-second time period, it's a disqualification.
And I presume the horses are pretty highly trained as well, specialized horses that know what to expect as well, do they?
Absolutely. They go through pretty much any of the timed events. So by timed events, we're talking calf roping, the steer wrestling, the team roping, and the barrel racing. All those horses are very, very well trained. They go through hours and hours and hours and hours of training, and they could be valued anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000.
All right. I think the next one shows that you know, that's a pretty impressive lean angle there. That if I was on a motorbike doing that, I'd be well happy.
I had a thing of a motorbike scenario there. Yes.
Yeah. Pretty impressive.
And your flash is on there.
Yeah, my flash is on that one. You can see it bouncing off the barrel. Didn't quite catch the eyes of the horse, but there again, if you went to the next one where it shows the edited version, you can almost see a hint of it in the eyes. But you know, again, I'm going a long ways. I mean, I'm probably in this arena, I am probably maybe 70, 80 feet from where that horse is.
Right.
So the speed light's got to throw some light out there and be able to light that up.
What was the ISO? So 1600 ISO on that.
So.
Okay.
That's the advantage to using the flashes. Then I can bring my ISO down. But speaking of high ISOs, the ISO on this one,
very high one,
25,600. And I was absolutely amazed when I brought these back and put them on the computer, how good and clean they actually looked. I did a little bit of work with noise, denoising and things like that. But there's no reason that I couldn't easily get a good 8x10, 11x14 out of that. There's a little bit of motion blur in the head of the bull, but at only 200th of a second, that doesn't surprise me. But, you know, it was raining out that night. I didn't want to have a flash on in the rain. I've got a rain cape for the camera itself, but I didn't want to risk, a $500 flash to the rain. So I thought, better than no pictures at all. Well, let's see what these cameras can do.
Okay. I'm taking it the keynote, Bubba Gregg. That's the guy, is it? On the bull, or is that the bull's name?
Bubba Gregg is the cowboy. That is the cowboy. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just wondering whether it was the cow or the cowboy. That's great.
No. It was the cowboy. I don't know what the name of the bull was. I actually have a sheet that I could probably go and look that up, but.
That's quite the blacks are black there. That's quite impressive for that kind of speed.
Yeah, and that's what just absolutely amazed me, that I can actually pull that off at that, and you know, it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, you gotta really understand, you know, how to make this work. And of course, you know, you wouldn't want to do it for fine portrait or maybe landscape photography, but in sports, you know, you think back to the film days and the green we used to put up with, and you know, now I'm shooting at these kind of speeds and there's almost no noise to it. Even if there's a little bit, to me, in a sport like this, that's very acceptable.
Mm. That's excellent.
Well, Marty, that's been fascinating looking at some of the photographs, but I can't help but wondering, with all those animals and steers and bulls and horses running around, you must have come close to having some incidents. Anything come to mind that you can think about of a situation where you had to almost run for your life?
I have had one close call over the years in the bull riding event. And so during the rodeo, I actually have a sheet of all the contestants, and I'm after I take my pictures, I'm actually marking down information on there that relates back to my image numbers and things so I can track all this. So the one bull rode, and I was sitting up on the fence taking my little notes, and I started climbing back down. Well, I should say that before I climbed back down, I kind of looked both ways, and I looked like the arena was clear. There was nothing going on. So I'm climbing back down the fence, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see a bull coming up behind me. With the pickup man's got him roped, but he's going full bore, right? So the pickup man saw this going on too, and of course these guys are they're pretty sharp. They know what to do, when to do it. So it may sound counterintuitive, but what he did was when he saw me climbing down, he actually undallied the bull, so the bull he hoped would just continue to run right by me, not even see me, because he was free then, you know. So what happened though is there was so much pressure on that rope that when he undallied it, the knot on that rope came and it hit the back of my hat or side of my hat, hit the back of my hat, sent my hat flying out into the grandstands with all the crowds. Meantime, I'm climbing back up the fence saying, oh my God, what did I do? You know? So first thing I do is go, oh good, no blood. When I got back up on the fence, the bull had stopped a little bit past me, kind of turned and looked at me like, all right, I'm going to get you, guy, you know, and we kind of had a little standoff until the pickup men kind of came and rode in front of us and kind of pushed the bull out, and then the bull went on his merry way, and it was probably about the scariest thing I ever had happen personally to me in the rodeo arena, and in fact, the next year when I came back, some of the people from the grandstands came up me and talked about that during the rodeo.
And did so, any one of them have a photograph of it?
No.
Not that anybody turned over to, you know. So, and I can other stories about that too, yeah. So that was a fun and interesting. I'm glad everything turned out well, but it just leads a guy to say this is a dangerous sport and everybody has to be paying attention all the time if you're out in that arena.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Marty, it's absolutely fascinating. I've listened to every word of you there. I'll leave that up so people can see how and get hold of you and where they can go to look at more of these photographs and purchase any if they
it's
need.
It's interesting to see you had the Women's Professional Rodeo Association. So they're all men on those photographs, but they have their own.
With the exception of that barrel racing, the barrel racing is a woman's event in pro rodeo here. They do actually have their own association, the women, but they do compete in all the same events as the men do, but it's only within their association. Within the pro rodeo realm, as an organization, we incorporate the barrel racing from their organization into what we do.
Okay,
great. Well, I'm sure Dan would agree with you. That was absolutely fascinating, Marty. It's a different world. It's a different world from what we're supposed to. So going down to photograph it. But my daughter's gymkhana next month won't be anywhere near as exciting as that. But we might learn a few tips and tricks from what you told us. So thank you very much for taking the time to go through that with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure. And if anyone wants to contact you or more information, you'd be happy to get an email or anything from that.
Absolutely. Yep.
Lovely.
I'd like to say a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is iMen Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got, and they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money, and they deal with any kind of problem. Actually, that's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Max, and I'm sure they can help you out.
Okay, so as I said, big thanks to Marty for joining us tonight. It's been really interesting. Hope you'll come back and join us again sometime in the future. Marty, we got your details on the screen, but where can we get hold of you? What's your details?
So rodeoflix.com is the easiest way. It's RODEOFLICKS. And through there, if you want to shoot me an email, I'll be happy to reach out to anybody that has questions.
That's great. Thank you very much. Damien, where can we get hold of you?
I'm DamienWormsley.com.
Thank you, Damien. Okay, and I'm Martin Kelly, martinkelly.mac.com, or Magic Man in the Slack room if you want to come and join us there. So, as I said, thanks again to Marty for joining us tonight. I hope you found that interesting, and by all means, send in comments and tell us what you thought. Thanks all. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Thank you. Thanks, Marty.
Thank you, guys.